Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a podcast audio play brought to you by me, Aquanimous Rex. I forgot to mention last episode, but we are now officially coming close to the end of Chapter 2. If you noticed, when I've talked about Chapter 1 in the past, it includes episodes 0 through 9, which is, counterintuitively, 10 episodes. Likewise, every 10 episodes will constitute a chapter, and we'll have a compilation made at some later date. The Chapter 1 compilation is still underway, and I'm really psyched about it. I'll keep you guys updated as we go. The next episode, episode 19, will represent the ending of Chapter 2, and segue us into Chapter 3. If I can figure out a better way to express which chapters we are in through the episode descriptions, I'll do that as well, so I don't have to keep clogging up the beginning of the podcast. Anyway, thank you for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 18, Mundi. It must be in accordance with the secular fields to maintain that in order to counteract some effect of diabolic magic, the filtered and focused soul, note, scrawled in the margins, psyche, mind, consciousness, geist, must intimately cooperate with the witch doctor, or whether one without the other, that is to say, the filtered and focused soul without the witch doctor, or conversely, could produce such an effect. Moreover, the filtered and focused soul, when most deliberately styled and trained up to the skills of unmaking, must be kept free from the taint of lusts of spiritual bread and wealth offered in trickery by the banal phantasms of the other world. The unbinding and unwitching of those most diabolic bondings, note, scrawled in the margins, vincula, links, ties, nexus, can only be performed by those unbound themselves to the workings of the spirits. But for every act which has an effect upon another, some kind of contact must be established. And because the spirits, who are not bodies, can have no such actual contact with a human body, since there is nothing common of this kind between them, therefore the spirits use some human instruments, and upon these they bestow the power of hurting by bodily touch. Excerpt from Der Hexendoktor, The Witch Doctor's Guidebook, written by an anonymous philosopher, 1484. He wouldn't have much time, he knew. But Jack returned to his squat in the old garage, mind made up. The Oneironautic contraption, a large, crude tub full of rainwater collected in the last storm, stood ready in the main garage, past the office full of its fungal growths. And Jack intended to submerge himself in its salted waters once more for the first time since that fateful incident weeks ago. Jack had not had the courage to try again after failing so miserably.
"This time I'll get it right. This time I'll fix it. Somnia, here I come."
Jack grabbed the small wooden bowl that he had gathered his strange mushrooms in, hewn from the block of mix-matched mycelium in the garage office, and dumped them onto the ground. His side projects would have to wait. There was no more time to experiment with the local fungus, which were unknown and which he had been attempting to categorize into taxonomies made difficult by the mutagenic nature of the local area, and of the world at large. Jack took the bowl and walked over to his leather camping pack, fished through it, and pulled out a bottle of clear liquid stoppered with cork. He placed the bottle in the wooden bowl and grabbed from the table a small leather satchel, and proceeded to carry it all beyond the alien lump of growing mushrooms into the main garage. The garage was mostly gutted and not altogether impressive. It was a simple service operation for the local automobiles back when anyone could afford to own vehicles, back when people hadn't abandoned Noel yet. The bad times merely beginning. When cars ran on gasoline instead of the compressed natural gas most of them used these days. The garage wasn't that big, and was mostly empty. Jack had painstakingly cleared it of most of the long-forgotten detritus, and little remained. There was a table, which was covered in papers and diagrams, and a chair which looked ready to fall apart at the lightest touch, but which had served him well thus far, the many hours he had sat studying the works he had brought along with him. However, the most eye-catching thing was a large wooden framework that stood taller than Jack, nearly 10 feet across the middle. The frame which held in place a sagging array of tarpaulin, which seemed to swell, and was ready to burst, because it was full of water. Looking above, the makeshift reservoir revealed a funnel that had been placed upon the roof, built in such a way so that rainwater would flood down through the ceiling and into the fragile pool he had constructed. The hardest part hadn't even been building the wooden frame or lashing it into place so as not to lose any water. Instead, the difficulty had been in procuring several good quality tarps that had no obvious punctures, rips, or tears. There were three of them, placed one in another, and all three had been procured from Harpsville, the closest town of any note, and also the place he had acquired the necessary amounts of Epsom salt he would need for the sensory deprivation tank he had designed. Noel hadn't any manufacturing, and the process of getting all of the materials Jack had needed from other towns had taken a few trips. These were not fun times. But in doing so, taking the slow route, he had been able to settle into the garage squat outside Noel without warranting too much attention from the townspeople, who had assumed him a vagrant, which altogether was not an incorrect assumption, with some caveats. The first time that Jack had climbed over into the pool, earlier this season, nothing had happened. The young man had originally attributed this to the fact that the water was just too cold, as spring had only just begun. Without any electricity or other ways to control the temperature of the pool, he was forced to wait. Oh, he had tried to build a fire and allow for ventilation, and had nearly succeeded in burning the whole place to the ground, and resolved himself to wait for nature to take its course. This was when he had decided to take up the side project of nurturing the strange local mushrooms and had attempted to safely acquire knowledge of their chemical compositions. This work had entertained him for a time, but he soon grew impatient with the weather and decided he would make the best of what he had in the isolation tank. The second time Jack Knave had gone into the tank, he had ingested an aqueous ethanol extraction of the seeds of Ipomoea tricolor and a few other ingredients, ground finely and soaked in some powerful local apple brandy for a week. After carefully straining and filtering the brown sludge and seed shell particles out of the mixture, Jack had manufactured a small vial of mud-colored liquid, a potion whose recipe had been pilfered without consent, as were so many of his texts. This time, when he had entered the isolation tank, it had worked. All of his shortcuts, all of the infusions and decoctions he had brewed and ingested, the combinations of ritual and incantation, had finally yielded a result. And for a brief moment, Jack had entered Somnia, realm of the spirits, and seen wonders that he could barely put words to. And then, after coming back Mundy side, things had started to go wrong. Very badly wrong. The door had been opened, but it had not been shut.
If only you could see me now!
Jack yelled to the empty garage, his voice reverberating against the tall walls.
How obviously wrong you were to suggest that I...
Jack dropped his armful of supplies onto the rotting wooden table.
The great and powerful Jack Knave, of many years, 23 in total, was not ready for real work.
He opened the satchel and removed a small glass bottle full of swirling, muddy liquid, setting it down on the tabletop. He reached back in and removed a rolled-up, weathered piece of parchment tied shut with a single hemp string.
Clearly, I am a fully realized and capable being. How could it even be in doubt? Right?
Jack unsealed the scroll and opened it wide, laying it across the table, bearing its ink to the air. Across its surface was a symbol made up of four interlocking circles, a sort of double Venn diagram. In the spaces left over were nine small glyphs, arranged three and three and three, in a sort of symbolic matrix.
Hypomnemagos, Jack breathed, his fingers tracing the intricate lines on the parchment. The magician's reminder, the formulaic mnemonic device used by witch doctors to assess the uncanny situations they often found themselves in. A tool of the mind to connect many disparate occult influences and aspects of environment in which they were contained. Nine symbols and a vast number of possible combinations. The iconic placeholders of a given system, not held to as if dogma, but used as one would use a hammer or wrench to get some needed job done. The witch doctors had stolen the symbol themselves. Or so Jack's mentor had claimed. Christian, or Mr. Solomon as he insisted Jack call him, was the only source of information that Jack had on the now all but annihilated Witch Doctors Union, the profession solidly a thing of the past even in Jack's adolescent years. When Mr. Solomon had originally told Jack that the Hypomnemagos, the magician's reminder, was a sigil itself stolen from occultists of a bygone era and used by the witch doctors in their work, Jack had believed him. Over the course of a couple of years under the tutelage of the strange Mr. Solomon, Jack had begun to suspect it was not at all an ancient symbol. No reference to it was made in any of the other works of antiquity that Jack had studied, though he looked for them. And so he had decided that if Solomon was going to stick by the story that it was appropriated from unwilling sources, instead of fessing up to having created it, as he surely had, that there would be little wrongdoing in the act of Jack himself stealing away the parchment, stealing away the symbol, in his mind. Besides, fuck you anyway, Christian. Oh, sorry, Mr. Solomon, you melodramatic fucking prick. Jack yelled, taking some of the herbs he had brought and throwing them into the wooden bowl, uncorking the bottle that contained the clear liquid and splashing it over the plant matter until they were soaked and giving off a harsh, strange scent.
I bet you'd love this, you pompous ass. I bet you'd just love to see the absolutely massive fuck-up I've found myself in.
He took in hand now the smaller bottle, full of brown potion. He opened it and drained the entire thing in one pull, into his mouth, shuddering and dropping the bottle onto the table. A chill racked his body, and his stomach accepted the bottle's contents unhappily.
Christ, that's gross, Jack swore.
He took his lighter from his pocket and flicked it alive, touching the fire to the edge of the wooden bowl, which erupted into brilliant green flame. The dried herbs inside of it blackened and curled, and the surface of the bowl darkened and started to smolder. The fire went out almost as quickly as it had arose, leaving behind ash and greasy soot, which Jack Knave pressed into with three fingers, staining them.
He drew the now blackened fingers across his forehead in 5 motions, using a new finger when one ran out of the soot. Now finished, dirty fingers being wiped off on torn pants, he bore a crude pentagram above his eyes, under the hairline. Jack reached into the satchel once more and retrieved dried poppy incense, small chunks of combustible material which he put in the charred wooden bowl and lit with his lighter. The air filled with pungent smoke, and Jack walked over holding it aloft to the isolation tank. He placed the fuming bowl on the concrete floor and began to disrobe, throwing his clothes to the ground without much attention. Now bare, save for the gritty star drawn on his forehead and a dark black tattoo on the back of his hand, he bent over and retrieved the bowl and its incense. Holding the receptacle with both hands, Jack closed his eyes and began to speak in recitation. "Sleep, King of gods and men of mortal birth, sovereign of all sustained by Mother Earth, for thy dominion is supreme alone, over all extended and by all things known." The effects of the potion were already starting to take hold. The accelerant mixed in was doing its job in speeding up his body's processing of the noxious drink, and Jack began to feel waves of tingling sensations wash over his naked body. He felt his mind start to loosen its white-knuckled hold onto the reality of Mundi, to lose its lock-jawed bite onto the neck of the human world. Jack continued to recite. "'Tis thine all bodies with benignant mind, in other bands than those of brass to bind, tamer of cares, to weary toil repose, from whom sweet solace in affliction flows." Jack envisioned the hypomnema in his mind, making sure to check each of the subtle forces and entelechies within him. The man had to be careful with the combinations of mental and emotional states he was soaking his mind-soul in now, adjusting them through willful recollection of memories and past experiences. Jack used his imagination as a surreal cosmic paintbrush, using this faculty to chisel away at the block of marble that was his mundane self, until both the psyche and the soma were in exact position, Jack's point in space-time carefully chosen for maximum efficiency, his past and future stretching out like an elongated worm, gnawing at the bosom of the world soul, chewing its way through the axis of the natural order. Flashes of intricate formulae and mysterious equations lit the back of his eyelids, showing him that the operation was working, was building momentum. The incantation continued. "Thy pleasing, gentle chains preserve the soul, and even the dreadful cares of death control. For death and Lethe with oblivious stream, mankind thy genuine brothers justly deem. With favoring aspect to my prayer incline, and save thy mystics in their works divine." With the last word, Jack opened his eyes. The incense continued to smoke, and he placed the bowl upon the ground and snatched the scarf that he had wound across his face earlier out of the pile of clothes. He tied it around his head tightly, blocking his vision. He turned to face the isolation tank, blind though he was. Jack placed his hands over the wooden rim of the framework and lifted himself, wiry muscles bunching, onto the ledge. He sat there, feet dangling in the room temperature water. It wasn't perfect, Jack knew, but it was the best he could do now, and there was no more time. Jack pushed off of the edge and let his body slide into the salty waters where he floated on his back. He began to breathe rhythmically and imagined in his mind's eye a circle with a dot in the middle. Placing every ounce of attention on this psychic focus, he began to take note of the top of his head, his throat, his shoulders, the joints in his arms, his breastbone, his groin, his hips, knees, ankles, toes, and back up along his body. "My soul is the blade which cuts two into one," he thought to himself. My mind is the candle unlit and the flame. These words unfurled in his head, and suddenly flashes of places, almost like spectral outlines, jumped up into his vision, blindfolded though he was. His body began to feel as though it were vibrating. If he hadn't have taken the potion, this would have taken longer. Even an Oneironaut skilled in the art of piercing the veil did not usually start to see such immediate results. My heart is a muscle the size of my fist. My will is a stiletto sunk between links in your armor. There was a sudden whooshing, roaring noise now, as though he were caught in a wind tunnel. His body was vibrating as though the entire isolation tank was in the back of a giant tractor trailer driving fast down a bumpy road. Scenes began to erect themselves before him, a city built into a gaping wound of some enormous monster, a marketplace filled with wares so exotic as to be indecipherable, a strange forest full of spiraled trees, an ocean of aquatic angels sucking on the bones of asphyxiated whales, a mother's womb, an alien planet, an infinite orgy. The sights in front of Jack rose and fell, coming into focus and then fading, until he was left alone, floating in a void. He reached up and pulled the blindfold from his eyes, and Jack Knave saw that it was not merely his obscured vision. He was, in fact, floating, in a void. Jack dropped the blindfold, which flew away on unfelt winds into nothingness, and he gazed into the abyss. Well, shit. He swore. This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 18, Mundi, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for future episodes. Music attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.